Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. So welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Larry Hobbs. Larry Hobbs is an old timer here in Mysore, and he's from North Carolina, and our paths have crossed, well, definitely on social media, but in Mysore a couple other times. And I'm interested to have him on the show to share some insights about his journey in yoga. And so, Larry, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, you're welcome.
And so let's talk a little bit. I always like to start with like a little bit of background information. And so tell us where you're from. Tell us like, you know, who the Larry was before you showed up to yoga.
Okay. Well, I was born in Wilmington, North Carolina, December 26, 1951. I'm still living in Wilmington, North Carolina.
So you didn't move far.
Didn't move very far. So throughout my life, you know, I've always been, you know, active, but I was working for DuPont in 1968, got drafted.
And Drafted into the military.
Went
Which
to
branch?
Army. Went to Vietnam, came back to Vietnam. And spent 14 months at Fort Bragg.
Okay.
And then when I got out of the military, I went back to DuPont working, and I worked with them for 32 years.
Oh, wow.
And so then I retired back in 2001, and I contracted for a year and left there in 2002 with early retirement because they sold the plant.
Oh, wow.
So during that time, I had always been active in martial arts, doing triathlons, just running races and all, but I was deep into martial arts, so I started practicing yoga using BKS Iyengar's Light on Yoga book, because I wanted the flexibility to improve my martial arts.
Okay.
And so it was totally about how flexible can you get so you can go
so you
to tournaments
the
and,
head.
Yeah. And compete, you know, and be, you know, fruitful in your competition. So then I heard about Ashtanga Yoga. So I, of course, pulled out the old David Swenson manual.
I mean, I think he's sold about a million copies of those things because they're pretty, I mean, I had one too. I practiced with it.
So I would just do, and then I got a DVD and just follow David.
Sure.
And then I met a few people that had practiced, but they had never really practiced with Guruji or anyone, but they had done a few workshops here and there. So they knew a little about Ashtanga.
Gotcha.
So then I heard Guruji was coming to the States, and my son was stationed out at Fort Lewis, Washington.
Yeah.
So it was a good way to go and visit my son and practice with Guruji. And David Grieg had actually brought Guruji there that year.
Oh, wow.
So I went there, and before that, I got a John Scott book.
Okay.
So I was doing what, you know, John Scott had in the book.
So you never really had a teacher before that,
no.
that time.
And okay. So I get there with Guruji, and it's like, I learned quickly that any of those things, that the modifications that David had in his book, don't do them around Guruji.
Yeah, they're not acceptable.
So that was like quickly getting scolded right off the bat.
Wow.
You know, on a lot of things.
And
but
what year was this, too?
This was, I think, 2002.
Okay, gotcha.
And so it was like, okay, so you got to do it the correct way.
Yeah.
The final version, not the other versions.
So, you got to go all in, Larry.
And I met Sharat, and then Sharat was just a youngin', you know, and he was a pretty young fellow back then.
Yeah.
And
I mean, talking 20 years ago, so he was probably 25 or 27, something like that.
So then, after that week with him, it was like, man, you know, this is really a great practice. So I, then I met my wife, Sita, and we, had went and did a few workshops here and there with various Ashtanga teachers.
Sure.
And so we were going to get married in 2007, in February 2007. So I called a friend of mine in Durham, North Carolina, who had a shala. It's called Yoga Spot, but she has a nice meditation room. So I asked her, could I use the meditation room to have my wedding, our wedding room? And she said, well, you can use the room, but you have got to come and do Annie Pace's workshop because she's going to be here this weekend.
Oh, wow. And she's here in Mysore right now.
So I said, okay, that's good, because I'd heard a lot about Annie and I just wanted to kind of see, you know, how it would be with Annie here. So we got there and got married, and the next day we started with Annie's workshop, and everything I did was totally incorrect to Annie's standards.
Okay.
So finally I stopped.
I've heard she has really high standards.
She has very high standards, and it's like Guruji said, you had to do it this way.
Okay.
You do it this way. So everything I did, she was correct, and I was going like, finally I just stopped practicing. I looked at her and said, Annie, is there anything that I can do right? When I walked in here this morning, was that the correct way to walk into a door? And she busted out laughing. And after that, it was like, this gal's going to be my teacher.
Okay.
So from then on, like, Annie was my U.S. teacher.
Oh, gotcha.
I would go back
Crestone.
And forth to Crestone and practice with her. And then
how many years did you do that?
I did that 5 years, but even after she had told me after the first two visits there, and which were both in 2007, early 2008, she said, you need to go to Mysore.
Wow.
And you need to go like now.
So she was the person that pushed it.
Yeah, she's the one that said, you get your butt over to Mysore.
Yeah.
And so that was my first trip coming to Mysore.
Oh, wow. And what was the environment like here?
The environment, it was totally different than it is now. I mean, I know that when we landed, we were at the old Bangalore airport.
Sure.
When I stepped off the plane, I wanted to turn around and get back on the plane.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I still kind of have that too.
It was too busy for me. I wasn't used to having that much busyness around me.
I mean, there's not a lot of stuff going on in Wilmington. It's nice. I've been there before, but India is like 400 times more people than...
Oh, yes. I'm not one that likes to be in a big crowd.
Yeah.
And being pushed by people. I'd have my space.
Yeah.
In the shala.
You're specifically talking about in the shala? Or are you talking about like on the streets of India?
On the streets and everything. I mean, when I went to Devaraj Market the first time, I was there 10 minutes. I was ready to get out of there.
I mean, it gives me kind of a panic attack to go.
Yeah, I was like, get out of my space, dude. Like, back off. Don't get in my face.
They're trying to sell you like a little, thing, you know, a little trinket. And you're like, I don't want that. And they follow you around the entire time.
Yes, yes. I said, get out of my ear.
Yeah.
Go away. I mean, I even shoved the guy the first time I was here. It was just like, it was too much. He kept on. I pushed him.
Yeah.
My wife goes, don't do that. And I said, and the store owner came out that we were going in and told the guy to go away. I said, people are like, they need to back off.
And
they're just too pushy.
Well, I mean, we have so much more space in the U.S., that's for sure. I mean, it's like, India is like the size of Texas or a little bit bigger. And it's like, we have a lot of space. And it threw me off too. I mean, I really felt like, when I hopped off the plane, I was like, I want to get back on the plane. Because the first time I came here, I flew into Mumbai. And one of my friends played a trick on me, and she was like, oh, hop in a taxi, you got 12 hours, and tell him to take a taxi ride, it won't be expensive, and tell him to like show you around. And I was like, okay. And so I showed up, they literally grabbed my bags out of my hand, put it on top of the roof, and I mean, I drove around Mumbai, and I was scared to death. You know, and so it was an interesting time.
That's good to hear.
That was 2006 or 2010 or something like that.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
Yeah, it was crazy. But I had the same experience. And so what do you, so what was your experience like in the shala when you were practicing?
So before I left to come here, like Annie had sent me an envelope. And she said, inside this envelope, give this to Sharad. Don't open it, keep it sealed, give us a shrug. So, you know, we go to the shala, and I was just even though it was a house with a shower on it, like being in there, it was just something special about it. And everyone waiting.
Yeah.
And so when I got there to register, I told Shraji, Annie Pace told me to give this to you. So he opens it up and he reads it. And he smiles, and I have no clue what it said.
Yeah.
What she told him to do with me and my wife. But it was like, it's something just clicked. And I know coming in, you know, the next morning and just sitting there and waiting. And all of a sudden, Sherrod goes, Colorado, you come. Because he knows Annie lives in Colorado. So he called me Colorado.
Okay.
And then he said, other Colorado. And I was like, I walk in there and I was so, my heart was pounding so hard. Yeah. I could not. The only thing I could think of was like, how fast can you do your practice and get out? I mean, it took me about 3 days before I could calm down enough. Because there was a lot of big name people like Leno practicing beside you, you know, and others. And I was just, I was like overwhelmed because I had never like been in it. And like, these are people that you read about.
Yeah, or that have written books about us.
Yeah, I was just totally, just couldn't believe it. And then Guruji came down and we got to see him in his office and talk to him. He was pretty frail, but he had good days and bad days. And it was just, I don't know, it was just like being a kid and just being excited waiting on Santa Claus to show up, you know, when you're little. And then gradually I settled in and Sherrod was very, very, like, he was very kind to me the whole time. We've always seemed to have a good connect. And I had never done a lot of, like, dropbacks.
Yeah.
And this is just a silly story, but so Sherrod comes over and he says, you need to drop back. And I'm going, well, it's a little slippery because I didn't bring my rug. And so he goes, no, you drop back. And so I said, all right. So I was trying my best to drop back. And so I drop back and I slip and I take Sherrod with me.
Oh, wow.
And he's like right in my face.
You guys are cuddling on your mat together.
And he looks at me and he goes, buy a cloth mat. And I was like, oh my gosh. What a good way to fresh new teacher.
Was this the first day?
This was like the third day.
Wow.
So I said, boy, everything's going wrong.
So he didn't like Colorado very much.
So the next day, like, so I brought my cloth mat. The next day he was standing there and he was smiling and he looked. And we dropped back, came up, and it was fine. I mean, he never held that, you know, against me. He was like tackling him down to the ground.
Right.
And so by the time we left, it was like, had a really good rapport.
Yeah.
And, you know, made some good friends that I still see, you know, around here now, but not as often as, you know, before.
Yeah.
You know, like the first few years.
How long were you here for? Was it like a couple months?
6 weeks. Because this is when, like, the first time, like, we just sent a letter in.
Yeah.
And kept a copy of the letter, and then we just got an email confirmation. It wasn't like doing everything online.
Wow.
And so we just showed up and showed a copy of the letter that we had sent and just registered, and you just paid cash. They had the old money changer and, you know, did all that. And so it was quite an experience. And so made it back home. And then later on that year, I started having more issues with my spine and with my legs until I lost the use of my left foot.
Oh, geez. So, from nerve compression?
Yeah, but it was a genetic thing because I'd always had issues with my spine and my left leg. And so I had already bought tickets for us to come back at the end of December of 2009. But I ended up having emergency surgery on my spine and November 10th, 2008.
Yeah.
And that's when we got, so there's no way you can,
you
can't, because you don't be able to do anything.
Sure.
So on December.
Yeah. How did you start your practice again after that?
Well, while I was in bed and wearing a cast thing, a protection thing, when I was up and about in the house, I would just lay in the bed and I'd raise a leg and I would try to like do what I could do.
Yeah.
And I would stand up,
breathe,
on,
yeah.
And I put my foot on the door facing and try to get it as high as I could.
Sure.
And then I started just working to see how I could just take the brace off and do what I could do. I would, the only way I could bend over was I'd have to squat, put my hands on the floor.
Oh. And what did they tell you not to do?
Did they tell you not to bend over?
They told you not to do yoga at all.
but the guy during the surgery afterwards, he said, whatever you're doing, like keep doing. Cause he said, you know, he had some issues during the surgery. He lost a lot of blood, but I didn't want to transfuse you because it was a 7.5 hour surgery.
Oh man.
And they ended up putting two rods, you know, 12 plastic wedges and 14, 2.5 inch screws in my spine, you know, along the spine. And so I went on my follow-up 6 weeks later, and he told me, like, take the brace off. I want to see how you respond. And I was truthful to him. I said, you know, I said, actually, I haven't been wearing anything. I said, I've been feeling like I can get around good. And he said, well, can you bend over? I said, well, you know, if I squat and touch the floor, you know, I can, but there's other things I can do. And he said, well, you just keep doing your own PT. Do what you feel.
Wow.
Walk a lot, but do what you feel, you know, that you're comfortable with.
I mean, with a martial arts background, you know, and also yoga, you know, I mean, I feel like that's like, you know, that's a testament to the hard work that you put in.
You know? It was quite a journey. So I couldn't fly, but Annie was coming to a place in Raleigh. And I told her, I said, you know, I'm not going to be able to make a workshop because, you know, I've had this thing. She said, well, come anyway and just do what you can do. I said, well, I'm going to have to squat, touch the floor. So that's all right. You're touching the floor. So that weekend we spent there just doing the workshop with her, and that was in February. I managed to modify and do whatever through standing and then just sitting and doing the seated asana that I could do.
Yeah.
And it worked out.
Wow.
And by then I figured, well, I might as well try inversions. So did the inversions and I was doing, and just gradually it came back.
Wow. How long did it take you to get all the way back in?
Well, at the beginning of 2010, January, I was back here. So it was right at a year and I was back here in Mysore.
And did you have to back off any more than what you were doing?
To a degree, I showed Sherratt the x-rays and what had happened. And while I was here that time, he worked with me every single day on my binds, on Kramasanas, and on my back bends. He wouldn't, like, no one, he was letting that first season, like, touch me except him.
Wow.
And he would just tell me to wait.
That's good.
And
I mean,
so,
you know, like someone with that much experience helping you, I think it's a big deal. I mean, that's how you bounce back from, you know, an injury like that.
And so I was happy. I mean, every trip here has been very fruitful, you know, and I feel like I have gotten, you know, I am getting older and it seems like the group had gotten younger.
Yeah.
And I'm like, gosh, no, I think I'm the oldest one here. Yeah. You know, and now.
Every time you felt that?
After that second trip, so every time I've come, I felt like, at one point, one season, I was the oldest here.
I mean, for the listeners, before we started, you know, the interview, we were talking about how we both feel like old timers here, you know, because there's a lot of 20-something.
Yes, I mean, there are, you know, and now, you know, if you're hitting 40 or over, you're pretty much an old schooler compared to the majority of
I'm almost 40, so yeah, I'm definitely approaching that. Oh, man. And so, you know, the back injury stuff, was any of that caused from, like, being in the military or being, like, at DuPont? Or do you think it was completely genetic?
I think it's totally genetic because my mother, like, she is from Rome, Italy, and she said, like, growing up, like, they had a lot of bone issues.
Oh, okay.
And they always having to get injections for their bones and stuff back in those days. Of course, she was born in 1925.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it kind of runs in the family because she had always had some back surgery and stuff. And I think mine ended up probably being the worst out of the whole lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of degenerative bone disease, like a lot of joint issues where the joints start failing.
You have brothers and sisters?
I have a brother. Well, I had a brother. He committed suicide back in 1992, man. December 19th. And then I have some half siblings. I have two stepbrothers, half brothers, and a half sister.
Okay. So you're not like the only.
So I'm the only Hobbs.
Oh, you're not. Okay. So you're like the living legacy.
I'm the only Hobbs, besides my kids.
Your kids, yeah. How many kids do you have?
I've got 4 adult kids, 16 grandkids, and 8 great grandkids.
Holy crap! And what do they think about their grandpa? You know, coming to Mysore, India. Doing this yoga stuff, like what do they say about their grandpa?
Oh, they think it's fantastic because, you know, it's like, wow, you know, you go to India, you like India, you know? but none of them do yoga.
None of them? You haven't inspired any of them?
My middle daughter, Tamara, now she has taken some practices with me, but she is so busy with her family and everything else that they do as a family and volleyball and all the sports the kids play. She never has time. You know, my granddaughter, Anna, she's always telling me, she lives right down the street from me. And she's always going, I want you to teach me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all you have to do is
show up.
Come 4 blocks and you can practice. So I'm still waiting on her to travel those 4 blocks and practice.
You know, what I found is for family, actually, this is for everyone. I feel like, you know, we so want to, like, evangelize people into yoga, but it's evangelizing feels like a push into it, and you can't push people into it. It's actually, what I found is that it's actually a pull, and with your family members, it's a pull. It's like they see your behavior, they see what you're doing, they're attracted to it rather than it being like, you got to come immediately, you know, it's like, you got to come right now. Instead of it being like a sales pitch, it becomes like, they're attracted to whatever aspect of, you know, the practice or your life that, you know, is appealing to them. So,
you know, and that's it. I tell them, like, you know, if you want to come, all you have to do is show up.
Yeah.
And get started.
Yeah. And so over the years, do you, like, how has your practice changed?
Like, well, from the first time. Being able to do everything pretty easily.
Yeah.
To the big shift in the body after the spinal fusion, because it, when they fused my sacrum to my lumbar, doing all that, it's like I never realized how important it was to be able to tilt your pelvis.
Of course.
And so many things, and figuring out ways to get around not being able to tilt your pelvis.
Yeah. So it doesn't go anterior or posterior.
No, it's just locked in.
Wow.
And so I have to try to find spots that I can get on to do certain asanas.
Yeah.
Without damaging above the fusion.
Yeah.
And also not like tearing my hips up, which pretty much ruined one, but not from yoga. Again, just from aging and just joints wearing out.
Yeah.
That I had to have a hip replacement back in 2015. My left hip, because it got to the point it was bone on bone and I was losing all my flexibility because the muscles weren't allowing it to do anything because it just got
locked up.
Every foot strike was so painful. And so had to have that surgery done, and 8 months later I was back here again.
Wow.
Practicing, and I showed Gerard. And we started working on that. And
how do you help you with that kind of stuff?
Just not going too deep on certain things, being careful, like binding, because everything in primary is, you're not supposed to break 90 degrees. And of course, everything, you have to break 90 degrees.
Like
trying to figure out a point where you don't dislocate.
Yeah.
And with spinal fusion, your chances of dislocating is about 40% greater because you can't tilt your pelvis.
Yeah, geez.
And I dislocated it twice and actually had to have it replaced 2 years after I got it.
Oh, man.
Because I damaged it from just dislocating it a couple of times.
I mean, is it all worth it, though? I mean, is the practice worth experiencing the pain that you've had in your body?
Totally, because I've never had a yoga injury besides, you know, the aches and pains, the strains,
sure.
But as far as being injured in practice, I've never had it. You know, it's like when Sherrod said, you know, if you can't do something, blame your parents. So it's a genetic thing with me, the bones. So, you know, that's, you know, it's nothing I can do about, but I can still practice.
Yeah.
And you can find ways to practice. Like I don't bind on my right side. Sherrod told me not to bind, just the way my spine is going with the fusion. So I bind on my left, I don't bind on the right, but I get as close to the asana as I can.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, he told me not to do Supta Kumasana anymore after I had my dislocation, you know, my hip replaced. He said, you know, it's too much on the spine, it's too much on the hip. And so I'm really cautious when I practice just to make sure I don't push the limits because I dislocated it with Crouch Asana once.
I've heard of other people doing that as well.
And because I took it too far and it just went right out the back of the cup.
Oh, man.
And then I dislocated it coming out of Paravita Parsvottanasana just by putting pressure on my leg coming up. I heard a snap. I sat down and my leg was about 4 inches shorter and the bone, it was sticking out my backside. You know, I had a bit. And so I was up in Charlotte at Y2 when that happened.
Oh, man.
And so,
but it seems like you've bounced back from all of these injuries
and
pretty well.
The only therapy I've done for it is practicing, like strengthening and practice. Yeah.
And so when you look at the practice, do you think that it's actually more taking care of you physically or do you feel like it's
physically, mentally,
and emotionally?
Emotionally, definitely.
I mean, do you feel like a different person from when you walked in, you know, like a person who's into martial arts and now all of a sudden like where you're at now, do you see the world differently?
Oh, yeah. It took me till, gosh, I was probably in my late 30s. I really had some anger issues, it seemed like. You know, I mean, and I did. I mean, my childhood upbringing wasn't always like the best.
Yeah.
And so between that and work, war, and just other things, I think that's why with martial arts, it was more of an aggressive behavior.
Of course.
Being able to, you know, take something out of, I guess, you know, it's the way you put it, like going and competing, just constantly
pounding on
a
bag or kicking someone or punching something.
And so I noticed that the more I practiced that, you know, I started giving these things up because I found I was actually having some peace within myself where I wasn't getting angry.
Yeah.
Like now I never get mad. I might get annoyed with people or things, but as far as getting angry, I don't. And I used to have probably one of the foulest mouths around, you know, from being in the military, being a new mom, everybody cussed.
Of course.
You know, that's just...
I'm from Ohio. Everyone
you know,
cusses, too.
That's just the language. And now, you know, I don't cuss at all. I mean, it's just like...
I don't know anyone like you.
I mean, I don't cuss. There's not a whole lot of stuff that actually even bothers me because I feel like, you know, with practicing and just trying to be a good person that I'm only responsible for myself as far as my actions and all this other mess. I have no control of it, but it took me a lot of years to realize that. And then I say probably the last 10 years, it's really gotten to a point. It's like, I've had people ask, it's like, don't you even care? And I said, well, I care, but you know, there's really nothing I can do about you know what's going on.
Yeah.
Except, you know, I can control me and I can do the best I can
and
try to set a good enough example that other people will try to follow that. But I'm not going to push my beliefs on anyone.
Yeah.
And I just tell them, you know, if you do the work, it's not work that happens overnight, but if you stick with it and just listen to yourself and you'll find that you'll see little subtle changes, you know, over time. But it's not like one, two practices and you're, all of a sudden,
You're a nice person.
The world is like you're just in bliss because that doesn't happen.
Well, it's funny too because, you know, I've recently been having some conversations about, you know, the people that make it to the second decade, you know, like they're into, you know, the 15-year point or the 12-year point or any, like, you know, further along. And we were talking about like second decade practitioners. And do you feel like you made that big shift in the second decade of practice?
Yeah, I do. I mean, like now, like before, when I first started, it was like the practice was that it was more the physical aspect. It was like, you know, because I could do it a lot. And it was like, you know, I mean, everyone gets caught up in like, oh wow, you know, I can do this. I can't believe I can do this. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get older and then things happen. And it's like, you can't do those things. You still know how they're done, but it doesn't bother you because, you know, when you're practicing, you're at peace.
Yeah.
You know, you're on your mat, you're at peace. You still have, you know, you're still suffering no matter what you're doing at times. You know, it's challenging, even though you're doing it every day. There's still always that daily challenge. And it's just how you react to that daily challenge. Like, are you going to get annoyed? Or are you just going to just take what happens and let it go and just live with it?
Yeah.
And so I tell my students, like, there's never a bad practice. You know, even though things aren't going your way, you know, you practice, be happy that you did. You know, and later on in the day, you're going to realize that, yeah, you know, I'm glad I practiced.
Right.
No matter what the outcome or how you felt you did, because you're not going to get an award for what you can do or what you can't do. There's no brownie points. There's no gold star or silver star.
or any star.
Or head of the class.
Right.
You know, it's not. Everybody, like, showing up. And it's funny that you ask that, because this morning, you know, Sharat made a comment to me. He told the guy assistant, like, with background, he said, like, don't make him catch. And he laughed because he knows how terrible my background was. And so I busted out laughing. And afterwards, like, I walked over to him and I said, maybe I'll catch him my next lifetime. And he said, no, he said, you're always practicing. He said, that's what counts.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. It seems like he's taking good care of you the times that you've been here.
He has definitely been like my guardian angel.
Yeah. I mean, helping you through the injuries and, you know, having you here, like, you know, 8 months after hip and, you know, back and all that stuff, like getting back into this.
And after they replaced the replacement, it was like 8 months and I was back here again. Yeah. And I told him about it and he said, do what you can.
He gave clear direction.
Yeah, he said, do what you can.
Yeah. Was it a long period of time, you know, like when you had to start making all of these modifications to your practice because of the surgeries and because of aging, was there a long period of time where all of a sudden, like, where the practice, like, stopped working for you and then it picked up for you, like, in this more spiritual aspect, like what I hear
you
talking
about? Yeah, there's been times to where, yeah, it just seemed like, you know, I was stuck.
Yeah.
And then it came to me that, you know, you're trying to do way too much and you're not practicing what you preach a lot. It's that you need to spend more time, like, reading, doing some pranayama, maybe doing more inversions, doing less practice, and not trying to feel like you got to get everything back.
Yeah. What do you think? What do you mean by less practice? Are you doing a shorter practice or?
Or like less still days, practicing or? Every day, but not trying to push toward the point I felt like, okay, you know, you need to, like, get back and start doing intermediate.
Yeah.
And because there are some things like Pashasana and intermediate is really a no-no with a.
Of course.
Because you got to get so close.
Yeah.
And so, and then again, like, don't bind your right, bind your left. So,
yeah.
And he said, like, you know, you work, do the, you know, make sure you do the intermediate back bends at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because he said, they'll help you. So he's kind of like, always, and that's one of the reasons I come out here so much is that, and he gives me the guidance I need when I need it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Because there's a lot of times, even though I know what I need to do, it's like I don't always follow what I know I need to do.
Yeah.
But I have shortened my practice too. I know that if I start feeling any type of, like, cramping or weirdness in my leg, I know that's a sign I'm pretty close to fatiguing so much that the muscle can't hold the prosthetic in place that I need to stop.
Yeah.
And so
that you feel like that's come with age, or do you feel like that's just come with, like, a certain discrimination of understanding
a little of
your body?
Being the age aspect and also knowing that, okay, enough's enough, and using a little more wisdom than just going for it.
Yeah. Do you get the same thing out of your practice that you did your first trip here to what you're doing now?
Actually, I honestly enjoy my practice more now than I did.
Why?
Because I feel like it's more under control. It's calmer. I can sense things better. I know my body better.
Yeah.
I know what I should be feeling Whereas I was going on, I was a little blind about knowing what I should feel, when I should feel, when I first came.
Yeah. And you think it's because, like, there was a certain ambition to get somewhere, or, like, get somewhere in, like, the postures that sort of created some
like
sort of...
One of the, yeah, it was a thing, like, just being able to do it all. And not getting here and getting stopped.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're like, you stop here, you know, because I've never been stopped here.
Everyone stopped at something, though.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, you do get stopped. And so, but it was one of those things, like, the first time, it was like, you can't get stopped, you know, it was just in my head, don't get stopped. And so I was, and now that I think about it, it's been so many years ago, it's like, man, yeah, that was not a good way of thinking. Yeah. Probably better off if you had gotten stopped.
Yeah. If you had to give advice to, you know, some of these 20-some-year-olds here, because there's a lot of them here right now, if you had to give advice to them you being one of our elders in the Ashtanga community, what would you give? What kind of advice would you give them?
Not to expect too much, not grasping to get more, and just follow the practice and do the quality of the practice and not the quantity of the practice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like what you do, but how you do it.
Yeah.
And don't be disappointed if you don't get a new asana or if you don't get two new asanas.
It seems like everyone sort of gets stuck in that rat race of like, did I get something that...
Because I know people who have come back and they've been mad because they didn't, you know... Yeah. Get an asana.
Me too. Or basically they were ignored the whole trip and, you know, like maybe Sharat was teaching them a lesson or something like that. And they refused to see that. They just are like, how did I only get Pashasana when I practiced third series at home?
That is something that she said, because a friend of mine, that happened with her.
Yeah.
And she has been doing intermediate, some advanced day at home. Mm-hmm. And she comes here and said, you know, he only gave me Pashasana.
Yeah.
5 weeks, and I was here 2 months. You know, that was it. And I said, maybe he was trying to
teach you a lesson.
What you needed and give you a little left. And 6 months later, she goes, you know, after I've thought about this over time, you know, that was the right thing to do.
Yeah. Well, and also, I feel like, and I'm not sure about your friend, but I feel like there's a lot of expectation that gets put on Sharat, and there's a lot of expectations for the new people that come here that they're supposed to get somewhere. You know, and when they don't get somewhere and they have to come to this realization that it's actually about this relationship. It's not actually about like the poses. And that's like one of the cool things. So it's like, how are you going to form, you know, a BFF, you know, or like how are you going to form a teacher-student relationship being here for 4 weeks or whatever? It's like impossible, right?
It's totally. Yeah. I mean, he has to see you. Just because I know like you with your students and other teachers, like, you have to know the student.
Yeah.
You know, that's why he asked that you have your own shala, get a student base that you see every day.
Yeah.
So you can have that relationship with your students because you know them. You know every little thing about them as far as like their emotional aspect, like who can I push? Who do I need to back off a little with? You know, and then who has a little more of emotional drag than others that seem to be emotionally stable?
Yeah.
And you do. You learn that by seeing your students day in and day out.
Yeah.
And then when you come here, then Sharat knows because he sees you and your pride. He knows how far he can push you.
Yeah.
He knows when he needs to back off. He knows when he wants to make you grunt.
Yeah. Like I did today.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh.
I heard that.
I feel like I need to apologize for everyone in the shala today because it's like.
That was a good one.
It was a really good one. I got adjusted for the listeners. I got adjusted into the posture that I'm working on, and he put me pretty deep into it. And I made out it was like a baby calf being born.
Yeah, I heard that. I'm like, oh, I was getting one back there.
I was getting one for sure. And he just laughed at me. It was actually a classic moment. Yeah.
But he knows that you can.
Yeah.
Someone else, he would have backed off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was about an inch away from putting my feet on the ground on one of the toughest asanas that, I don't know, I think I maybe ever have done. So pretty crazy. So why do you, why do you continue to show up? This is a question I ask every single person that comes on the podcast. Like, why do you continue to show up at the top of your mat? Like, what is that thing that gets you to the mat? Like,
I feel like that's the most sacred time and special time for me during the day. It's, you know, it's time for me. And no matter what else is going on, I can just like block it out for that amount of time, whether it's an hour, hour and a half, or even 30 minutes, if that's all I have. It's me, it's my time. And I just sets my clock, you know, it just sets me for the day.
Yeah, it does that for me too. I feel so much better in like how I treat people and how I feel in my body and, you know, the perspective that I have. I mean, it's literally a huge shift. And I've noticed over the last, like, maybe, you know, 10 years that if I just can eliminate all the distractions in the morning and just get to my mat and just do the work necessary, not pushing, not slacking off, just like doing the work necessary, I'm such a better person for it, you know? And I feel like everyone kind of experiences that,
I think,
right?
People that practice consistently like they do, they know that today's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, everything.
It's like all downhill from there.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like, get your practice. This is the hardest part of our day, and it's at 4 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning, and then it's all, everything's much easier than that. And so what, let's talk a little bit about your teaching. And so what do you, where are you currently, or where are you currently teaching at?
I teach in Wilmington, North Carolina. Okay. And I have my own shala. It's Hanuman Ashtanga Yoga Shala.
Okay.
And it'll hold about 14, 15 people.
Wow.
And I open my doors and my gate at 5:15 in the morning. Okay. And I close at 10.
Wow.
And so I have, you know, I give people like the opportunity to come early before they get to work. And then I have some mothers, like they get their kids off of school and then they come to the shala around 8:30. So I have about two main waves, an early wave and then a later wave.
Yeah. And what do you like about teaching?
I love the meeting the new people and watching the growth throughout the years with them. Because I got one student, she's been my student for 17 years.
Oh my God.
And so.
You got to see the whole transformation.
Yeah, and so, it has been really neat though, just to see people change and then seeing how people had barely been over and touched the floor, getting all the way through primary, doing dropbacks, standing up, you know, moving into intermediate, you know, just, it was like, can you remember when you couldn't even bend over and touch the floor?
Yeah.
And just over the years. And so, and it's nice. And we have a very good community. Like we're everyone looks out for each other.
That's awesome.
It's, they know, you know, they can call anybody, anytime. Everyone really has a good connect.
Yeah, that's really special to have something like that.
And I, you know, I do screen students, you know, and I tell them when they ask, you know, can they practice the shala? Well, you know, I require this from you to be here. You know, it's like, I'm not here to entertain you. You know, I'm here to teach you to the best of my knowledge, the way I've learned from teachers that I've learned from, you know, and I expect you to like to follow the rules and show up because it is a discipline, even though, you know, you're doing, it's a lifestyle. And so, you know, you need a commitment because it's going to take a lot of commitment for you to move through and gain what you need to gain to learn about your practice and learn about yourself.
Yeah.
Because even though we're all doing the same thing, everybody's experience is different from what we're doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you can't commit, if you're just looking for something else because you've been doing this type of so-called yoga or whatever, or you just want to be bouncing around, then, you know, you probably don't want to be here.
Yeah.
Because I'll push you if I think you need to be pushed. You know, I'll back off. You know, I'll teach you step by step. You know, the first day your practice may just be Surya Namaskar A.
Yeah.
I may just have you sit after that. You know, and then we'll add on. You know, but I need to know that you have an understanding of what you're doing before I move you through. It's not like you're not going to do all the primary first day.
Yeah.
It's going to take you weeks.
Yeah. I think it's a big distinction because I feel like a lot of times people show up with some yoga experience. They know a little bit about Ashtanga. They show up with a piece of paper that has all the poses on it, you know. And
that's
like,
a no-no.
I know. Same.
That is a no-no. Yeah. I see someone pull a chip. Go put that up.
Yeah. Yeah. Put it in your bag.
So that's what I'm here for.
Yeah. The piece of paper becomes the teacher, you know. It's like instead
I said, it's also a disconnect. You know, every time you turn to look, you disconnected from everything you've done.
Yeah.
you know.
And this is something you learned because you were mentioning David Swenson's book. I mean, did you practice with that when?
Yeah.
It's like.
And it was like, oh yeah.
You like learn that.
You learn that, yeah. And you get the DVD, and you learn a little bit here, you learn a little there, and it's like, okay.
Then it's not how it's supposed to be taught,
and
right?
And then you go and you meet the master there, and you get totally blowed out because you're not allowed. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Putting your hand on the floor.
Yeah, crazy. Well, Larry, man, it was great to talk to you. I feel like, you know, you gave a breath of fresh air, and I hope a lot of people hear this because I it's a breath of fresh air to see, you know, someone like yourself, like, go through the injuries, age, and, you know, really come out on the other side and show that the practice is, you know, more than just these physical asanas that we're doing and really about, like, how we live our lives.
Yeah.
And so it's a breath of fresh air. So I really appreciate you being on the show.
I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.